This is Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, a podcast and radio program presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. Most any contemporary musical style can trace its roots back to the blues. Time Signatures explores the blues and its musical connections with captivating interviews, lively discussions, and news from the world of the blues.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up in
And now, here he is, your host, Jim Irvin.
Well, hi there, everyone. Welcome, and thank you so much, Parker. I'm your host, Jim Irvin, and this is Time Signatures. Over the past nearly three calendar years now, I've been fortunate enough to bring you some of the biggest names in the blues. What you do not see behind the scenes are the phone calls, the email messages, the background chatter that goes into having these musicians on the show. And rest assured, there are times when it really does become a juggling act. Now, today's guest is one of the key people I regularly depend upon to make the connections for me. He worked with the Delmark record label between 2005 and 2017 and then opted to move on to other pastures, only to come back to the label in 2019. After nearly 20 years with the label, our guest has become a familiar voice, if you will. And I can attest to the fact that as a PR person, he is among the best at what he does. And for someone trying to form relationships in this podcast world that we started, I appreciate him and a select few others at all of the other labels. But today, we're singing the praises of this guy, Kevin Johnson. I am pleased to welcome you to Time Signatures. And as promised, when we last spoke, I told you that we were going to have a special surprise guest, a former AIR personality, a fellow board member from the Capital Area Blues Society, and a current member of the Further Adventures of Fat Boy and Jive Turkey, my good friend, Benjamin Hall. Welcome to you, sir.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Good
hello.
To have you, man. Good
you
to have you
good
both.
At that, Jim.
Good intro. I don't charge any extra, man, so you're good to go
wow.
here.
Impressive.
So, Kevin, Ben
has... Already.
Ben has a couple of questions for you, which we're going to drop in here and there. But for right now, I want to get a bit of a foundation going first and have you tell me about your earliest memories of music. Would you do that, please?
Yeah. I was thinking about that earlier today. The first song I ever remember when I was really little was my dad playing some old, you know, 50s rock and roll. Gene Vincent's Bebop-a-Lula was the first song that I just remember in my head, like just that. You know, simple little sing-along stuff. I didn't know who it was, but you know, I just remember that it was like almost like a catchy nursery rhyme type song thing. That's what I remember when I was really little, like, you know, first memories of music. And then I got into, like, you know, pop music of the 70s. I grew up in, you know, the 70s, so whatever was on the radio, top 40 crap.
Right.
Which is actually kind of funny because now I listen to that yacht rock station once in a while, that genre, and that's kind of like brings back memories of my
reminds you of the backseat.
Exactly. My wife cannot stand it. She's from a different generation, but it's very nostalgic to me, that whole yacht rock stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, then in the 80s, I got into kind of the usual route. I got into, like, you know, classic rock, Led Zeppelin, Doors, Hendrix,
Sure.
And at the same time, I was also getting into the very early stages of rap, hip hop, rap music, which I don't listen to at all today. But back in the early 80s at New York, you know, LL Cool J, Run DMC, and Grandmaster Flash, and all that.
Oh, yeah.
I was way into that because I played basketball and I had some African American connections back then. And I grew up in a little, you know, little north side white Chicago suburb, but I had some connections with the basketball with some little rap music there. So I was into that for a while. So I guess I've always been attracted to African American music, to be honest with you. That's been a big attraction. I guess you would say it was very different from what I grew up. So it sounded very, no, I'd never heard anything like that, and a little more exotic, I guess you would say. I don't know if that's the right word.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad his phone just dinged because I forgot to turn mine down. So
All right, no more dinghy.
We both did it now. All right, so has it always been for you on the listening side, or did you have some musical aspirations as you were growing up as well?
Always on the listening side. I never, ever played an instrument. I took a couple of guitar lessons and then just gave up, and I've just been crazy listener, collector, you know.
Frustrated musician, right?
Yeah.
That's how I describe myself too. So I am trying to pick up the harmonica and I am playing with it, and I've invested in a couple nice ones. Actually, I have a couple sitting right over there on my desk that I got from Deke Harp. If you know who he is.
Oh yeah.
He drove James Cotton's tour bus for like 7 or 8 years, actually did all of James' harps for him. And has done some for several other people, including Ozzy Osbourne and Elwood Blues.
Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear he's got quite the place down in Mississippi, like a really cool shop.
Oh, yeah.
And store. And, yeah.
Yep, right down there in, why do I always want to say Cambridge? It's not Cambridge. It's
Clarksdale.
Clarksdale. Yeah, Clarksdale. Yeah. So I have to get some background on your work in the PR field. So where did you begin the journey of doing that kind of work?
Well, that's a good question. I started talking about what music I was into, and I never even got into the blues. I started listening. I'm going to back up a little bit and continue on to that. My dad was a big influence on me in many ways, and he just celebrated his 90th birthday. So happy birthday,
happy
Barry.
Happy birthday to him. 90, how about that?
Yeah. Big deal, yeah.
Yeah.
And he was big music guy like myself, and I grew up listening to his records and a lot of classic rock, and was into jazz and classical. And when my parents divorced, when he was 40, in the late 70s, he started hanging out with some younger guys and started getting into the Grateful Dead.
Oh, wow.
Started following the Dead for about 10 years, from age 40 to 50. So this is when I was in high school, and before high school, when I was like from 10 to 16 or around there. He was playing the Grateful Dead and Allman Brothers and stuff, and I some of the out there stuff I didn't like at all. I was like, didn't get it at all. And then after listening to it for so long, I kind of soaked it up and really started loving that type of music, blues rock and psychedelic blues rock, 60s music, 70s music. And
sure,
that's what got me into the blues. I was noticing that all these songs that I really enjoyed, and who did that originally, you know, started look at the liner notes and who played them. And like a lot of people got into the blues through some rock bands. And that was how I got into the Grateful Dead and the Allman Brothers. As soon as I got into the blues, I was just hooked. I just was like, what is this music? It sounded so different from anything I had ever heard. And when I started hearing the real deal stuff, the, you know, Lightning Hopkins and John Lee Hooker and Muddy Waters and Hollow, I was like, what? This stuff is just, I just got hooked. I had a friend who I was working with in the restaurant up in Evanston, a friend named Tim Coleth. Do you know that name?
I do know the name, yeah.
Yeah. So Tim,
he works up at Alligator.
Tim works at Alligator still. He's been there since, I don't know, early 90s, I guess it is.
Yeah, I think him and Matt come in about the same time.
Yeah. Matt's a little bit after. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Tim and Mark Lipkin, who the publicist there, they've been there forever. And I think Carrie's still there too. Anyway, they've long time workers at Alligator. But yeah, Tim worked at Alligator, and I worked with him at the restaurant, and he helped me get an internship at Alligator. This is a long time ago. Like I said, 90, I don't know, maybe 92, 93, right around there.
Man, right in the thick of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Good time.
So I did get a little start there. I'm going to put the blame mostly on myself because I was just young and dumb, but it didn't connect that much to me back then, to be honest with you. Like I said, I'm going to blame it on myself, but I didn't totally jive with Bruce maybe or something. I don't know.
Okay. All right.
And the woman I worked for didn't I wasn't that into it when I was doing there and doing on the retail side. Anyway, I kind of left it again. And then years later, through Tim Coleth again. So thank you, Tim. He heard that there was a job opening at Delmark. Gosh, 10 years later. And I interviewed with Sue Kester, Bob Kester's wife, and we hit it off and I met with them. And it seemed like a better fit at this point, at that point in my life. And yeah, so like you alluded to in the beginning, I started there in 2005, and besides a couple of years off, I've been there ever since. And
we're kindred spirit, I guess, because I feel very much the same. I mean, I did, as we talked about before we started recording, I actually came out of broadcast radio, never got into the blues portion of it, but I worked with, you know, classic rock. I worked with country. I worked with contemporary Christian music. I did a little bit of everything, easy listening, what I guess you would call yacht rock stuff. I hate that phrase. I really do.
Right.
we come from similar backgrounds. Now, Ben, I want you to step in here for just a minute, if you would. Reason I brought you on with me as a very special guest host is because your earlier work as an air personality at a local radio station. So what I'd like you to do is talk about that for just a minute. And how does Kevin fit into the picture for you?
Well, I took over a blues radio show that existed for years before I got the show. And you know, it kind of went, the DJs, you could tell the quality of the show by their interest in the show. Yeah. So some people would just come in and just play a bunch of stuff and not do any research or anything like that. But I tried really, really hard to, well, and also Scott Allman helped me out a lot.
Okay.
When I first started out, because
there's a guy right there. Wow.
He was the one that he was telling me what I needed to do to get on the lists. You know, he's like, get a subscription to Living Blues Magazine, and you know, told me all the things that I needed to do to get started. So I, you know, I really invested a lot into my show. It was 3 hours long and I spent 8 hours putting it together.
Wow.
And I would feature at least three artists a night. Usually one rootsy, one in the middle and one newer. And I would try to tell as much, you know, historical facts about them and that sort of thing. And I think that I can't remember some, I think an album came out on Delmark and I contacted Kevin to try to get that album, to have him send it to the studio. And I ended up talking with him and I told him that my son was named after Junior Wells.
Okay.
And then he said, well, you know, do you have this album at the studio? I was like, no, I don't. He's like, do you have this album? No, I don't have that one either. Do you have that? No, I don't have, like, the only one I had was my, I had two and they were my personal. They didn't belong to the studio at all.
Wow.
And, Kevin sent me all the albums I didn't have, as well as a picture of Junior Wells that hangs in my son's room today.
No kidding.
Yeah. So, I mean, he filled in a huge part of my collection. And, whenever I had a question or anything, I mean, I would call him and he'd have no problem answering it. And really, you know, I feel like, Kevin, you go above and beyond, man, for real. And
yeah,
then
I can attest to that.
Years later, I contacted Kevin again because I was coordinating a jazz festival and we were looking for specifically kind of a free jazz or kind of a, you know, psychedelic jazz act to play as part of a series that we had. And I called, you know, contacted Kevin and he gave me the name of Jason Adashevitz and he was fantastic.
That's cool.
And I'm still very appreciative to Kevin for that.
So the radio program,
vibraphone player, Jim, if you haven't never heard of him, he's a jazz vibraphonist, but he plays it like no one I've ever heard play it.
Yeah.
So was the radio show, was that the one that was produced by Cabs?
No, it was this one was it was through MSU. It was WDBM, and it was called the Accidental Blues.
Accidental Blues, yeah.
Yeah, and it existed for decades, like pretty much since.
You can't even talk about radio, and this guy knows everybody you're talking about.
Yeah,
Scott Allman and you know, Accidental Blues. I mean, because he's been there forever. I mean, he's got long, deep ties. You know.
Yeah,
that's cool. Now, while you have the microphone, go ahead and lob one of those handcrafted questions that you've got, if you would.
Okay. So Kevin.
So then your son, real quick, your son is named Amos. Is that what is that?
No, his name is Wells.
Oh,
that's
cool.
His first name.
Nice.
Yep.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I had an old boss, and he named his son Parker after Charlie Parker, and I was like, well, why not? You know, name him after my favorite harmonica
cool.
player.
That's cool.
My son's name is McKinley.
I did not know that. Wow.
Although he hates the blues, so we'll see.
Wait, how old is he?
He's only 9, so I'll give him some time. Yeah.
You got hope.
I mean, with a name like McKinley, he could be a president too.
Well,
that's right, very presidential name. Yep, McKinley Johnson. Yes.
So I did a little Facebook stalking today. I see your posts quite frequently. I think it's because I interact with them. And I, under work, it says that your work is the blues and that you are a lover, a promoter, collector, writer, fan, student, researcher, and historian. And I think that it's interesting that you put lover before you put promoter or writer.
Yeah.
But could you dig into that a little bit and let us know why they're in the order that they are?
I never even thought about that. I think it goes back to just how I'm just so this music hit me so hard that I'm so passionate about it. That was the number one thing. That was what initially just drew it. I just loved it so much, and it took me a while to try to figure out what. What my role was going to be. I just knew I had to give back in some way. But yeah, I guess my first love of this genre just hit me, and I never let go. I mean, I love all sorts of types of music, but the blues is the one that hits me the hardest in my soul and my passion. And so that's why lover, I guess, is in capital letters is but I don't love all the blues. I'll be honest with you. There's a lot of style of blues I'm not a huge fan of. But I won't be negative.
No, and you know the thing is, the thing is, I've said many times on the show that the blues is a buffet. Matter of fact, I'm sure people that are listening are sick of hearing me say that. But the blues is a buffet. You take what you want. You know, you may want something more than I want. I may want something more than Kevin wants. I happen to like a little bit of just about everything. But there's certain aspects of the blues that are less of a draw to me than others. Mm-hmm. You know, but at the end of the day, you take what you want and you're happy with what you have. And I've had discussions with Mick Colossa many, many times. I'm sure you know who Mick is, Uncle Mick. And he is a very structured he's a purist. He actually describes himself as a purist. The forms of blues that he likes, he calls himself a free range blues musician, because he does everything from Chicago blues, Delta blues, Mississippi, Memphis blues, and some of the other variations of it. But when it comes to the blues rock, it's not his thing. That's okay. But I want to return to the discussion here if I can for a moment. When you left back in 2017, what caused you to leave Delmark that first time, if you don't mind me asking?
I had to let go. So business was getting worse and worse. You know, it was the beginning of downloading, and Bob Kester, the original owner of Delmark, what kept that Delmark going for a long time was the Jazz Record Mart. That's what fed the label. He had that store. Otherwise, I don't know if Delmark would still be going around, going, if, you know, he would have been, the downloading just started killing everything. And,
sure.
I don't know if Bob adapted to it as, as well as he could have, should have, whatever, but, you know, understandably he's, been doing it the other way for so long, releasing vinyl and then tapes and CDs, and then all of a sudden this crazy new digital world comes along. It's like, what is this? And wait, people aren't paying for it. And anyway, yeah, so they let me go. Yeah, it was tough, because I didn't see it coming. I knew business was horrible, but I didn't know they were gonna Fire Me, and it was pretty emotional with the Kesters, with Sue and everything.
Oh yeah.
So then I started my own company called Proud Pop-Up Promotions and Publicity.
Okay.
And I started the first project I worked with was through my friend Johnny Bergen, guitar player Johnny Bergen. I'm sure you know. Have you had him
right,
on the
yeah.
show?
Have I you have not had him
Johnny?
On yet. Haven't
oh,
had him on yet.
Johnny. He's fascinating. Yeah.
I know a guy that'll get him for me too.
Yeah, and he.
I heard about him from you.
Yeah, he's amazing. You should look at his touring schedule. He works like B.B. King used to do 300 days out of the year.
I was gonna say B.B. King, yeah.
But he books his
wow.
own shows and he plays everywhere.
Man.
It's crazy. Anyway, yeah, he turned me on to this recording that was coming out through Kid Anderson's studio, Greaseland. It was a Howlin' Wolf tribute album. And so that was the first project I got to work called Howlin' at Greaseland. And Johnny's partner at the time, Stephen Kais, was producing it and had a whole bunch of amazing predominantly West Coast and Chicago musicians on it. But I got hooked up with Kid Anderson and Jim Pugh from that. So then I started working loosely with Jim Pugh a little bit through Little Village Records. But still doing freelance projects as well.
Sure.
And then I, you know, so the Kesters sold the label Delmark. I can't remember all the timing on this. I think it was 2018. And then yeah, Julia Miller and her partner Elbio took over. And then, so I was aware of that. I was kind of trying to see what was going on with them. And I met up with her and told her my story, and she was aware of me I believe as well. And yeah, and I started working, you know, part time for them again. And it was an adjustment period for sure. New ownerships,
sure.
new owners, new styles, new personalities, and I think it took us a while to get everything feeling right. And we got there, and so now I work again with Delmark, but I still kind of have a freelance position. It's a little complicated, but I work predominantly with Chicago's Delmark as well as California's Little Village, Jim Pugh's label out of Northern California.
Yep.
And then I do take on freelance projects still when the timing is right and when I love the music enough, when the artist is impressive enough. It's hard for me because I have, like I said, I have another full-time job and I got three kids, but when I can find the time to take on other jobs I deem worthy, I do. I have a can I plug a new project coming up?
By all means. Yeah.
It's not gonna be on Delmark or Little Village. I'm doing a new Billy Price record, but it's on a new label called it's not a new label, but he had a label on he had a release on Little Village last year, 2024, 2 years ago. But
okay.
He's on a label out of Pittsburgh called Get Hip Records, which is like kind of like a cool like garage rock soul roots label.
Okay.
That's been there for a long time in Pittsburgh. That's where Billy Price is from. So this is gonna be a new Billy Price album, soul, fantastic soul singer, songwriter. I'm really impressed with his songwriting. He's lived a good long life and he's seen a lot of stuff and he's now pouring it out in his songs. He's a really great songwriter. Drummer producer Tony Bronigal's helping him out again, and it's all over the record. And they had a success in this last record, which I helped promote. And so we're doing another one again. So that'll be coming out soon. So excited about that.
Well, keep me posted on that by all means. I would definitely be interested in talking to him and checking out the album. And you know, one of the things that I like about working with you is that you're not just down with Delmark, you are doing some things with Little Village, which has kind of been cool because you've actually brought me together. You've been responsible for me talking to Jim Pugh. I think you had a hand in my Kid Anderson interview, yeah. Which just aired today, by the way.
Oh, good. I got to check it out.
I talked to Kyle Rowland.
Yeah.
Kid Anderson, he's an interesting cat, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
He's just all over the place, but if you stay with him, he's fun. You know?
It's
And I mean,
really fun. Yeah.
I mean, who would have a studio, a recording, a fully functioning recording studio in their home? Literally in their home. He cut a hole into the garage because that's where the control room is. Okay. I've heard all kinds of stories about this guy. It's a lot of fun, but
whatever he's doing, it is working. The stuff sounds.
Oh my God. The stuff that they're bringing out. And what about Sean Mac McDonald, dude?
I know.
Listen to that kid. It's like Sun Studios, 1956. It's that old school. And I asked kid about that. And I'm like, man, did you intend to do that? Because that's what it came across as to me. And he just smiled and he says, yeah. That's what I was going for.
But yeah, it's really cool. These younger,
man,
African American bluesmen or who have such good taste. They're wise beyond their years. It's amazing that I don't know if they're. I feel like it skipped a generation for some reason. Excuse me, I shouldn't.
No, you're fine. You're fine. But you know
really,
the cool. But the cool part about it,
digging deep, they really digging deep in the past, and it's exciting and inspiring.
And they're staying true to it. Jontavious Willis, Rel Davenport, Sean Mac McDonald. You know, there's three big ones right off the top of my head. I'm going to tell you right now. And I've said it before, and I'm sure that, you know, you, if you guys know who these young guys are, you'll have to agree with me. The blues is in pretty damn good shape.
Absolutely.
I mean, the future
I'm super excited. I'm going to see DK Harrell tomorrow night.
Do me a favor. Tell him Irv said hi. Would you?
I for sure.
Please do. Sure. I've interviewed him twice. He is the everyman of the blues. People tease him a little bit because he's got the BB King persona that he has leaned on early on. Yep. But I'm telling you something, he's not a one trick pony. I'm telling you.
No, I know. I'm so excited to see him. I've never seen him. I've never met him in person. It's crazy. I have these working relationships with these guys, and like I've never met Kid Anderson. No, that's not true. I have met Kid Anderson, but it's been a minute. Yeah.
Well. Make no mistake, Kevin, the Delmark label from its inception had a literal who's who of the blues artists in its stable. And as I was looking over who's there today in preparation for this interview, hold on just one second.
Yeah.
I can edit this out just a moment. I have to get to it.
What is it?
It's on YouTube.
Oh.
Hold on, we got some YouTube audio that's playing here, and I can't find it on my flipping phone. You got to be kidding me, dude.
That's all right.
Bear with me, guys.
This is exactly something that happened on my blues show.
Hold on, I got to walk over here. I'll be right back. Hold on.
It's on the computer. It's not on my phone.
Oh.
So, Ben, do you live in East Lansing, or did we?
I do. Yeah.
Okay. Are you born and raised there?
Yeah. I'd moved to Detroit for a little bit, moved to Kalamazoo for a little bit, but this place has a tractor beam on it. Just keeps bringing you back.
Love it. It's not a blues podcast, but are you familiar with a podcast called I'd Buy That for a Dollar? Some guys out of Kalamazoo?
No.
You should check it out. I don't know if I should do another shout out for another podcast. These guys are out of Kalamazoo, though. Yeah.
All right. Is it a comedy podcast?
Record collector geek podcast.
Oh, okay. I can dig that.
All right. I'm going to go back and reread that question.
Yeah.
All right. Now, Kevin, make no mistake, the Delmark label from its inception back in 1953 had a literal who's who of the blues artists in its stable. As I was looking over that list today, it's no less impressive than it was all those years ago when the label first launched. Talk about some of the names that you guys represent today, would you?
Yeah. Well, I think we have a nice mix of veterans on the scene and some young...
Sure.
Youthful guys like we were just talking about who are giving the future of the blues a you know, exciting signs of the future of the blues. We just put out a single by a young guy, Jemiah Rogers. Are you familiar with him?
Yeah, I got to get him on. You and I got to talk because I was told months ago I need to get this guy on. He's out of Chicago, right?
He's out of Chicago. He's been playing since he's a little kid. I'm talking like 5 years old. He was in a family band. His dad was the leader of the band. And so he's been playing I've known his name for a long time, but he's really getting his career going and getting his stuff together right now. And so we'll have a full length album coming from him.
Nice.
And he's only, I think he's, like I said, he's been playing since he's been a little kid. So, but I think he's probably, I should know, but I want to say he's almost not even 30 yet. You know, he's late 20s, maybe. Might be early 30s. And then, you know, veteran bands, Pierre Lecoq's Mississippi Heat, we just put out an album.
Yeah, buddy.
They're always an amazing band, and they always have fantastic singers on it, a big variety of different, which makes it exciting. You know, you never get bored with them. They're always, he always has just the most outstanding musicians on his records.
And did you remember that email you sent out in September and I came back to you like almost immediately?
Oh, maybe. I don't know.
He sends out this email and there was five albums, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Five albums. It was in September. I'm sitting at Bell Tire in Lansing and I'm getting my tires put on my car. Okay.
Which is an all-day event.
It wasn't too bad. It wasn't too bad. They got me out of there pretty quick, but... So I open up this email and there's five albums and I look down and the first album at the bottom of the pile is Pierre Lecoq. I clicked it. I started listening from track one and I'm sitting there listening to this album. I'm thinking, man, this is really good stuff.
Yeah.
Track nine comes on and I went, this sounds like Danielle Nicole.
Yeah. Isn't that track amazing?
And then I look at the credits, and it is Danielle Nicole. It's called Shiver and Blues.
It is.
If you haven't heard it, look it up. Seriously, right. It'll blow you out of your chair. And
you'll be shivering. It'll send the shivers down your spine. It'll move you. It's amazing.
It's a song that Pierre wrote for his father when he was dying of COVID. When he was in his last moments of life, that was from that perspective.
And
I messaged Kevin. I'm like, I gotta have this guy on like soon. I want him. I mean, it just grabbed me, that whole album. Yeah. And honestly, and as luck had it, I interviewed Pierre and he says, oh yeah, he said, I'm gonna be playing in Michigan this weekend. And I said, oh really? Where are you at? He said, I'm gonna be in Marshall. He said, you can be my guest. So he gives me passes to come down to his show. And we went down. We had a blast. And I got to meet, is it Ineta?
Yeah, Ineta Visor, yeah.
Yeah, we're talking legendary woman. And she could barely walk, dude. But when she got to that microphone, baby, she let it all hang out. I have never seen somebody... It reminds me, there was an old baseball player, and I can't remember who it was, but man, he walked up there. They called him Old Man River because he walked real, you know, he walked with a hobble, and he'd crack that bat, and he'd run them bases quick as lightning.
Yeah.
And that's what
was
I had.
Was that Satchel Paige?
No. Okay. It wasn't quite that far back. but Ineta, you know, she had a hard time getting out there to the stage, but man, when she got out there, buddy, she let it go.
No, I love that when you see that with old me, you're like, oh God, is he going to be able to play? He walks and then you get up there and just, you know, Pine Top Perkins, you just, you know, when he was old, you could really play. So,
well, Ben, I see you've been looking at your phone occasionally.
I've got my notes on it.
You got your notes on there? Okay.
I do.
Do you have another question ready that you might want to ask him?
So I have a feeling that I know what this answer is going to be, but have you forged any special connections with any blues artists?
What do you mean exactly? Like friendships?
Like friendships?
Yeah.
Close friendships or?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. That's one of my greatest thrills is I got to know these heroes of mine who were on the stage, you know, and then I got to get to know them for absolutely.
Any come to mind?
Oh yeah, like I got a chance to really get to know. They both passed away recently, but they became good friends of mine, Eddie C. Campbell and Tail Dragger.
I knew that Tail Dragger was going to be one of them.
real characters of the blues, and oh yeah, there's so many. Oh, I got a chance. I spent. It's been a long time, but I used to spend a lot of time with Lurie Bell, and he's a very interesting, sweetheart of a man. I haven't, ever since I've been busy with my family life, I haven't spent much time with him, but he's a beautiful human being. Jimmy Burns, who just put out an album in Delmark, is a longtime friend. And speaking of the Rocket, Johnny Bergen, I talked about earlier, we go way back, and he's a absolutely gem of a person, and a just a sweetheart, and a really interesting guy too. Yeah, for sure. I get to know these people. I'd like to get to know them more, but back in the day, especially before I had started raising kids, I was able to get to spend more time with them. This guy named Little Arthur Duncan, who's passed away. He was on Delmark. I got to spend a lot of time with him, and fantastic guy. And then Dave Spector, who's a current artist on Delmark, is a longtime good friend of
what
mine.
What a great guy!
Yeah, he's awesome, and we go way back, and he's a dear friend. And he's a partner at Evanston Space Music Club, which I'll be going to tomorrow night for the DK Harrell show. Like I was mentioning, so I don't know if I told you that yet, Dave, but I'll see you tomorrow, Dave, if you're listening. I don't know when. Well, this won't be airing then, but that's one of my definite favorite parts is getting to know the musicians for sure.
Do you have any stories about any musicians you'd like to share? This is kind of a two-part question.
Sure.
Because those are my favorite. Stories.
Well, I could tell a story of Tail Dragger that is interesting. So we used to go see him at Westside. Most of the blues I would go see was at kind of the popular Northside or touristy clubs, Blues on Halstead, which unfortunately closed recently, and Rose's Lounge and Buddy Guy's Legends and Blue Chicago. But I started going to see Tail Dragger. He would play mostly at West Side clubs, funkier little ghetto clubs. And yeah, I have many stories with him. He was just such a good entertainer and kind of had one of those rough personas that you might be intimidated by, scared by, but he was a real sweetheart. And he protected a lot of us, you know, young white kids going out to these, you know, little clubs. He made sure we were safe, walk us to the car. And one crazy gig it's probably, if I could single out like one show of my, I mean, I've seen thousands of shows. This show just was like, I was blown away by this show. It was a post church Sunday afternoon, early evening gig that we Tail Dragger used to do at this little place. I don't even think the place had a name. It was at Van Buren and Pulaski. I think it might have been called Joe's, or I heard maybe some people call it Mary's or something. I can't remember. But we used to go see him there once in a while, and this was a very special day where you get all the ladies in there in their finest Sundays post-church outfits. There's an older crowd. This was a show. It was a Tail Dragger, and then he had some special guests. This total characters, this guy named B.B. Jones was literally like a B.B. King imitator or whatever, like a ghetto version of B.B. King. And I don't think he ever even had, I think he had one single out. I don't think he ever recorded an album or anything, but he was really, really good. Like he had everything down to like the facial tics and everything that BB had and the grimacing and everything, but
wow,
just play like BB. And then there was this other guy named Bilbo Walker. Have you ever heard of Bilbo Walker?
That name sounds familiar.
He was this wild Mississippi bluesman, like juke joint blues rocker, and he would play like Chuck Berry. And of course, Tail Dragger would play like, would sing like Howlin' Wolf. So I was sitting there in this small little funky ghetto club. I had like tears running down my eyes because I was seeing like something that's, you can't really explain it. It was seeing like the funkiest ghetto version of Howlin' Wolf, B.B. King, and Chuck Berry in this small little club with, you know, women screaming and men dancing. And it was just like, I was in heaven. It was just, that's my little Tail Dragger, you know, blues story nice. There for you. Yeah.
Nice.
There's many that, there's some I can't tell on.
No. Well, you could, because it's a podcast, but I understand why you wouldn't. That's okay.
Yeah.
The biggest regret that I have is that I didn't get to know you in time to get Tail Dragger on before he passed. And that's, you know, that's been the hardest part of doing this podcast is I'm just going to say it the way I feel it. It's like I'm racing the Reaper. We've lost and we continue to lose, you know, blues people regularly. And it's a damn shame.
That's the worst. That's the worst part. You said the best part was getting to know these guys. The worst part is predominantly older guys and they're passing away. And it's so, it's really hard.
And as big as Buddy Guy is, and I'm not going to badmouth the man, as big as he is, two of my favorite interviews were with Bobby Rush and Bob Strozier. And these guys, you know, they're in that genre. They're in that late generation.
Mm-hmm.
And
Strozier is 94. Still driving. Still performing. Not only he's performing, he's still driving to gigs.
Wow. and you see him touring the world with Bob Courtois. And there's another guy, man, Bob Courtois. 42 years he's been doing his radio show out in Phoenix on KJZZ. Yeah. I am such a fan of the guy. I don't know if you can see the license plate back here behind me, but I've got a KJZZ license plate hiding behind me.
Those low-down blues.
I try to listen to his program. Yep, those low-down blues every Sunday night on KJZZ. You can stream it. And I do. You know, I try to get on there every weekend and listen for an hour or two. But he's another guy that, you know, that highlights, you know, two or three or four musicians during this five-hour program, okay? 5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then I learned that Phoenix doesn't change time. So instead of coming on at 8, now it comes on at 9. So I started recording it on my computer, and I can listen to it at my leisure the next day. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway,
yeah,
I digress.
Bob's a hero of mine. I got to give a shout out to Bob, too, because he not only does he have the radio show, not only is he an amazing harmonica player, he also has he owns a roots music club, blues club,
Rhythm
roots
Room.
Music called the Rhythm Room that's been there forever, too, and I never made it, unfortunately, but I've always admired Bob, what he does for the blues, and does a lot.
Well, let me tell you, I'll drop this in your ear. I know for a fact that coming up, I believe it's the end of September, it's going to be a celebration of his birthday, as well as the 35th anniversary of the Rhythm Room is going to be going on out there. But the guy, I mean,
amazing.
I didn't plan on talking about this, but he has 42 albums in his catalog, okay? 42. I own all 42 of his albums.
Wow.
Okay? A lot of these are signed by Bob. Some of these are signed by everybody that was on the album.
Amazing.
Wow.
But the stuff that he has done, the recordings that he has made with some of the big older, I mean, he's got Coco Taylor, he's got recordings with her, he's got stuff with Willie Big Eyes Smith. I mean, ridiculous. And he told me, he said he's got a bunch of albums in his vault that he has yet to release.
I know. Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah. So, yeah, I I'm actually going to be having him on for another go round because we talked during my first season, and it was back then it was just audio, and we're going to do video this time around, and I expect this interview is going to go at least an hour, if not 90 minutes. And, you know, when you get somebody that has that type of a pedigree, you let them talk as long as they damn well want to talk.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
That's what we're here for, is to preserve that history one story at a time. Mm-hmm. So speaking of which, Kevin, here we are almost 73 years into the business. I'm excited to see what you guys have come up with, and I'm looking forward to the 75th, just going to say that. And if my math is correct, it's going to coincide with the 10th anniversary of the purchase in 2018, correct?
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. Good call.
I'm excited. Yeah,
I'll have to bring that up in our Delmark meeting tomorrow. Yeah, good point.
And you know what? Wow. I'll tell you this. I have a portable recording set up. I will come out there. You let me know when you're going to have the celebration. Nice. I will come out there. I will bring my portable unit, and we will do interviews the whole evening long. How's that?
Love it. That sounds good, Jim.
All right. So let's get this information from you now, Kevin. Where do we send people to check out the music that you guys offer at Del Mar? Let them to keep watching for releases, get some merch. Or reach out to you, perhaps to secure a gig for one of the artists that you represent.
Yeah, you could find me. I don't have a website, but my you can always email me. My Delmark email is promo@delmark.com, promo at delmark.com, and my personal email is delrayjohnson. D-E-L, D as in dog, E-L-R-A-Y, Johnson, my last name, yahoo.com. And I have a Facebook page. You can also message me, Proud Papa Promotions and Publicity, or my personal page. But yeah, delmark.com. You can find out about all our releases. We also have for radio people, we also have an AirPlay Direct account, which is a great way to get new releases as well as our older releases. And I'm always uploading older catalog as well as newer catalog to be able to download for radio. That's for radio. It's a great free, it's a free service for radio too. It's a really wonderful service. And then littlevillage.com. No, littlevillage.com or .org. I should know this.
I think we'll it's Little Village or Little Village Foundation.
Little Village Foundation. Yes.
Yep. And I think it's .org,
Sorry,
isn't it?
Jim.
Yeah. Don't worry. We will make sure we get the right link and put it in there for you. How's that?
Sounds good. Yeah, we have. We mentioned briefly Harold Davenport. We're going to do Little Village is going to release his Harold Davenport's debut full length recording this summer. So that's super exciting.
Does it have a name yet?
I don't know.
It'll be interesting. Is he recording at Greaseland?
Baby.
You know, after seeing what Kid did with Sean. Wow.
I don't know the details yet. So I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Well, you can keep me posted. How's that sound?
That sounds good, Jim.
All right. Kevin Anderson, my special guest, Benjamin Hall as well. I want to thank both of you for taking time to join with me here today at Time Signatures. I want to wish the label continued success as well as yourself, and hoping to catch you guys out on the road, maybe in the not so distant future. And Ben, catch you guys out there doing your thing as well.
All right.
All right. Stick around for a minute, guys. Let me tie the ribbons on here and I'll say goodbye to you properly. Before we close this episode, I want to talk to you about the Blues Foundation located in Memphis, Tennessee. The Blues Foundation preserves blues heritage, celebrates blues recording and performance, expands worldwide awareness of the blues, and ensures the future of this uniquely American art form. The Blues Foundation is responsible for the International Blues Challenge held each year on Beale Street, the annual Blues Music Awards, which is coming up shortly, and the Blues Hall of Fame, celebrating 46 years, and they're just getting started. To make a tax-deductible donation today, please go to blues.org today. Click on the donation button on the top right and make your donation. And as always, thank you so much for your consideration. And that wraps up this edition of Time Signatures. Once again, my thanks to our guests, Kevin Johnson and Benjamin Hall, but also to you, for without you, none of this would be possible. Jim Irvin reminding you, keeping the blues alive is everyone's responsibility, but preserving the history of the blues one story at a time, that's my mission. Until next time, so long, everybody.
This has been Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. For more information on cabs, visit capitalareablues.org. You can find this episode and past episodes at lccconnect.org. The Time Signatures theme song, Michigan Roads, is used by permission and was written by Root Doctor, featuring Freddie Cunningham.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up in
Until next time, keep on keeping the blues alive.